Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. You can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 100 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Jane Allen about her book, Mediumship Demystified: The Art of Understanding and Teaching Mediumship. Jane is a psychic and spiritual medium, Reiki master, author, and mentor. Hi, Jane. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to talk about mediumship, which is always a passion for me.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called Mediumship Demystified: The Art of Understanding and Teaching Mediumship. So to start off, let's go into your origin story, so to speak. How did it come together that you got to this point?
I originally started teaching Reiki in about 2009. And I was finding that as I was working with clients, I was picking up not just on their physical well-being, but also on their emotional well-being and also their spiritual well-being. And it raised in me a few questions that I needed some answers to. I then had a life experience which wasn't very pleasant. I had cancer and I went into hospital to have an operation. And at that point, I'd taken myself off into a quiet room so that I could just do a little bit of meditation and get myself nice and settled, because obviously I was very nervous to have a major operation like that. And I just felt so supremely calm and collected and supported and loved that I just about flew down the corridor to that operation. I knew that I was going to be okay. I knew that I was going to come out. And after I'd had the operation, that feeling had disappeared. And that really puzzled me. I wanted to know where it had gone, what it was, why it wasn't there anymore. And it set me off on the path of mediumship and trying to find out what mediums did, how they did it, watch certain mediums, see if I liked the way that they worked or if I didn't like the way that they worked, if I thought they were good mediums or if I thought they were not so good mediums. Why did I make those judgments, those assumptions? And so that sent me off into a spiritualist church. I joined their what's known as an awareness group, which is the first level group, which tells you all about how to access energy. And then I progressed to their development group, which is how to connect to spirit. And from there, I went on to spiritualist church platforms to be the guest medium. And from that, I set up my own business and I do my own readings, tarot card readings as well. And I wanted to raise the bar for teaching mediumship because I'd seen various examples of good teaching of mediumship and of mediocre teaching of mediumship. And I thought, really, we need to standardize this in some way. It's a bit hit and miss. And really, we could do with some sort of guide or profile or pro forma, so that everybody could sort of sing from the same hymn sheet and so that we could raise the bar for mediums, meaning that we got really good mediums on spiritualist church platforms. So that's how it all developed.
And you say in the book that you had callings and there were several over time. So what were the callings you had? Are they like signs?
It's very difficult to talk about a path that isn't one that's tactile, one that you can see, one that you can hear or that you can show to somebody else. It's about an inner recognition of something, and it touches you in a way that you can't really fully explain verbally to somebody else. It has a deep inner connection with you. It has almost like a soul. It's almost like it touches your soul and you know that something special has happened. And if you've asked for a sign and then that happens, you know that it's happened for that reason and you make that connection.
With callings, is it like there's a, you know, you talk about the spirit team or your guides and they want you to take a certain direction. So they give you nudges over time.
Yes. There is always free will, always free will. And at any time you can decide not to take that kind of a path. And there is no criticism for that. It's a free choice. We are all on a spiritual path, whether we realize it or not. And if we choose to step forward to take that to teaching others or to helping others, then that is totally our choice. But the callings that you get, it's a bit like, you know, I used to be a teacher and people always used to say, oh, well, that's a calling. Well, yes, it is. But how do you get drawn into that? It's just something that you know you have to do, know that you have to follow. And the satisfaction that it gives you from following that, again, it's a little bit difficult to put into words, but it just makes you feel more complete. It makes you feel calmer. You understand more the much bigger picture of the world. And the little things that used to annoy you so much that other people might do innocently, they just cease to bother you. You've just got an inner belief and an inner calmness that helps get you through most of the difficult days that come to all of us.
So is there any thought you've had that maybe your whole life, I wouldn't say a life plan, but it's like where you've arrived now was the idea of how your life would go in the first place, perhaps before you were born, you decided that, and that you would be a teacher like this, but being a teacher in a school was just you in training for when you get to this point.
Yes, it does seem a little bit like that now. I've always had an interest from being very, very young, about 16, 17, in what happens when we die. I've always been interested in those kind of subjects, the tarot, crystals. I've always been drawn to those kind of things. But life gets very busy and you have a family, you know, you get married, have a family, and you get distracted by material things, getting a house, getting sorted, getting jobs, all those kind of things. And it's only when you start to reflect again on your life, when you have time to do that, that those things rise to the surface again. And that's kind of how it happened with me. I gave up teaching through stress and I needed to find something else. And in order to find something else, I had to look inside myself a little bit more. And that's what set me off on the path to Reiki. And then Reiki led to mediumship. And then mediumship led to teaching mediumship. So it was almost like all those disparate parts of my life kind of came together.
Now, there's all sorts of things you say in the book, which I've never really thought of before.
Well, that's good. I'm glad I'm challenging somebody.
Because there's this idea that mediumship is basically evidential. And it's almost like, yeah, I'm trying to prove that there is an afterlife, that your deceased loved ones are still with you. But then in the book, you say your role is to enable others to make up their own minds. So it's not like you're really trying to prove it. You're just giving them information for them to make their own decision.
So I'm what you call an evidential medium. So the way that I work is that I provide evidence of the loved one that I say I have in spirit that wants to come and speak with you. So I will provide information about maybe how they looked, how they dressed, some of the words they might use, some memories that a client might share with them, all those kind of things. And then when I feel the client has accepted that I have who I say I have with me, then I will go on to give a message. I do think that it's important for spiritualism as a religion that evidence is given first. However, it's not for me to force my beliefs on other people. And so I lay out the groundwork, but I allow people to make their own decisions. I feel that everybody walks their own spiritual path and that it's for them and their guide or their spiritual leader or their God, however they perceive that, to work together. And it's not for me to dictate.
And I think you also say that it seems a bit weird. Somebody comes to you and maybe pay you some money to do this, but you say that you're working for the spirit communicator. You're not working for the recipient.
That's right. My responsibility is to pass over what spirit is trying to communicate. That doesn't always mean that I satisfy a client's needs or what they perceive as their needs. Some clients come and they have a very fixed idea about who they want to come through. For example, you know, a client might come to me and say, I want to speak to my mother. And I'll say, I cannot guarantee that because it's up to spirit to decide who comes through. Spirit will decide what you need, not necessarily what you want or ask for. And so I have to accept that there is a bigger picture between the spiritual connection, me and the client, than I may be able to see. And so therefore, I have to accept that spirit decides some of the things that happens in a communication like that.
Could you tell us any incident you've had where some really astounding information has come through and the sitter, you know, confirmed it?
It's always the little things that really sort of touch people. The things, the detail that nobody else could know but the sitter and the person in spirit. It's things like knowing that the client has been talking to a picture that they have on the side of their bed, and that spirit has been listening to those words and repeating those words for them, or summarizing a conversation that this person might have had with the picture. Those kind of details. Things like one instance I remember is that it was a memory of a client making pom-poms with a grandma. Things like that are quite personal and specific to an individual. Another one was making rosewater perfume from her grandma's garden. Those kind of things are very personal, and they bring back the feeling of intimacy between the sitter and the person in spirit. And it's those things that make the connection special. And so we're always looking for those details, always. Some of the best healing, though, comes through passing on emotion from spirit that wasn't able to have been spoken during their lifetime. We can't assume that when somebody passes on that they have had the opportunity to say everything they needed to say to everybody they wanted to speak to. And so some of the things that come through on spirit are the words that they would have liked to have said before they passed.
This book is about training mediums.
It is.
Do you ever get the feeling that the spirits need training in how to work with a medium?
That is the process of learning to be a medium. It is not just for a medium to learn how to connect, but also for your spirit guides or your spirit team to work with you in order to bring through the information from a person that wants to give information to a client. That's part of the process. And it does take a while to get used to and to trust what you're hearing or what you're feeling or what you're seeing. And then you have that confirmed by your client, and then that builds your confidence, and confidence builds better connections and so on.
You talk about how mediumship can be taught and it can be learned, but yes. Do you have this kind of thing where there's different levels of talent and some people can learn a lot but only go so far, and then other people can be really good?
As a teacher, it's your duty to make sure that the opportunities are there for everybody to excel. And the way that you do that is provide learning opportunities that everybody can access. And so my book is really about providing those multitude of opportunities in a variety of ways and circumstances so that each individual can find their own path to learning how to communicate with spirit. It's a very personal one-on-one relationship, your relationship with your spiritual team or your guide. And to give somebody one example of a way that you are able to connect is not enough, because that might not be the way that you want to work or the way that your guide wants to work. And so my job there really is to provide as many opportunities as possible and as many as different ways as possible, and to clarify how that is happening and how they are receiving the information, what sort of clairs they're using, if they're being clairvoyant or if they're being clairsentient, and to recognise how that information is coming through. And by assimilating that knowledge of knowing how that information is coming through, that helps them to build the connection in lots of different ways. And so sometimes if you see a medium getting, you might say, stuck, or suddenly it goes quiet on platform and you think, oh my goodness me, have they lost the connection? They're just shifting their energy to a different method of receiving information. And so the more methods we have of receiving information from spirit, the better the reading is going to be, and the more versatile and more personal the reading is going to be.
And you mentioned the Clares there.
Yes.
Is there a thing where somebody may be naturally really good with clairvoyance, but then they have to struggle with the other Clares? Or would you say to someone, look, just concentrate on what you're good at?
So what we tend to do, or the way that I tend to work, is that Spirit will use the strongest Clair first. Spirit knows the way that you can connect easiest. For a lot of people, that is clairvoyance, but for some, it is clairsentience. It is a feeling about how they feel about the physicality of somebody in spirits, or how they feel emotionally about somebody in spirit. And so that has to learn to be interpreted first. So we always work with the strongest Clair first. So in any class, you will have some who are clairvoyant, some who are clairsentient. And you have to provide opportunities to build on both those strengths. But after you've been working for spirit for a while, they will take the accelerator off that particular Clair. And then that actually pushes you to develop more versatility by developing your other Clairs.
And so there's eight Clairs, and I think I've only heard of five. What are the eight Clairs?
Oh, now you'd have to get me to write them all down. We talked about clairvoyance and clairsentience. The first five that you think about would be based on your five senses. So clairvoyance is based on your sight. Clairaudience is based, obviously, on your ears. Clairtangence is based on your touch. I'll have to write them down to make sure I don't go and repeat myself.
Okay.
But you've got five based on the five Clairs. And then the others are clairsentience, claircognizance, and clairempathy. Claircognizance is just a sense of knowing, a sense of you've been given some information, and it's almost like it's been downloaded into your mind. Clairsentience is feeling something as if it's in another person's body. So you might feel that they had a heart attack, for example, and you will feel the pain in your chest, you'll feel the tightness in your chest, and you will know to interpret that as a heart attack. And clairempathy is feeling the emotion of somebody else. So you would feel the emotion of the spiritual person. You would feel that they had been upset or sad about a particular occurrence during their lifetime, or you would feel that they were really happy at a certain point in their life when they were doing such and such. And then the other five are based on your senses. And so we work to develop those five senses first, and then we work with the other three. And so that's why you have eight altogether.
And when you go through that kind of clair where you're feeling things, and like you say, you kind of feel it like it's in another person's body or something. If you do this with several clients in a row, can this get really quite draining, and you feel like you have to stop the connection with the spirit world for a while to recharge?
I don't think so. I think if you want to keep the quality of your work high, then you shouldn't work when you're ill or not well, obviously, in the same as any other job. But it's not something that takes your energy away from you. It's not something that leaves you tired or feeling low or depressed or anything like that, because it's not, you are shifting your energy when you work. And so when you come back to being, if you like, your normal, in inverted commas, self, you don't feel that any energy has been removed or taken from you. It's just, it just doesn't work like that.
So if you're starting teaching somebody mediumship, I don't know if you do it in classes or individually, and they come to you and say, I've had these experiences, I've never had any training. What do you do in the first lesson? What would you say to them?
So initially I start with working with their own energy. And so there are some exercises in the book about how to work just with your own energy to recognize where you are at any given point. Energy isn't a static situation. It's continuously shifting and moving. And so whenever we work, we always start with our own energy, where our own energy is. That means knowing how your body feels in different parts of your body, how you are emotionally, if you're feeling emotionally settled or not, how you feel physically. And we do some exercises that relate to that. The next steps would be then to recognize energy patterns in somebody else, another person who is here in this earth plane. And so we work in small groups or in teams of two, recognizing physical energy, emotional energy, mental energy in somebody else. And then from that, we shift our vibration further and we work with spiritual energy.
Okay. And do you do training in what we might call grounding or protection? Because I hear sometimes mediums do something for protection.
Yeah, I sometimes have a bit of a disagreement with other mediums about that. Because to me, if you're working with spiritual energy, you're working within the light, and therefore there is no need to be protected. You are automatically protected because you are working for the highest good. Other mediums feel differently, and that's entirely their choice. As for grounding, I think it's important to know where your energy is. And so to me, grounding is part of energy work, personal energy work. And we need to be centered and feeling calm and ready to work. And grounding is part of the beginnings of getting ready to work with spirit so that we know where we are before we start. Then we can raise our vibration to the spiritual level and we can make the connection for our client.
So you have a section in the book called the Energetic Resonance Continuum. Can you tell us what that is?
That's a little bit of my terminology. Trying to explain energy shifts is quite difficult because we don't really have a lot of language that is associated with energy. And in the big wide world, we use energy in a different format. We use it as, we can use it as electricity as energy or, you know, I haven't got the energy to do this or to do that. And it can be a bit confusing. So in my book, I explain how we shift our mental energy in order to be able to work with spirit and what effects that has. And in order to do that, I have to have some terminology to be able to explain it. And so that's the terminology that I use, energetic resonance continuum, to say how much your energy has shifted from you being in your normal state.
So with energy and frequency, is there a thing where it's almost like you've got to tune into the right radio station?
Yes, it's often described as tuning into the right radio station. The question is, how do we do that? How do we do that? And we have to have some teaching or methodology to be able to do that and to be able to do it at will and whenever we wish to do it. And then to also be able to put that on one side, because nobody should be connected 24/7, to put that on one side and say we're not working at the moment. At the moment, we're doing our living, not working. And so we need to go through a process of understanding how the brain shifts and how that shifts our energy and recognizing when our energy is in a particular part of that continuum.
Is there a thing where there's, I don't know, you can spot somebody or some type of person, I don't know how to say this. If somebody in the spirit world was coming to you and they had died in a particular way, I don't know, maybe suicide, Is that something that has a particular energy and you can pick that up straight away?
They would either give a visual of that. I have had somebody come through who had actually committed suicide by hanging. Now, if I pass that on, I have to be very aware of how I pass that on, because if it's in a public situation, as in a spiritualist church, perhaps the recipient, the client, doesn't actually want the whole church to know that. So I have to be very careful with my language and almost ask permission if they want me to say that. So I would say, you know, that I had somebody here that had passed in very challenging circumstances. And then I might go on to describe some other details And that gives the client chance then to say, yes, that's, for example, my brother who passed through suicide. It's when you're in public, you're a bit limited as to what you can do and how you can say things, simply because you want to protect the client from being exposed, giving knowledge to other people who don't need to have it in a public situation. In a private client situation, then you can be more straightforward and more honest and more direct. But even then, it can often be a very challenging situation when you have to bring through distressing news. But it can be quite evidential. If I say I have somebody here who committed suicide through hanging, straight away that client is going to know who that is. And so it can take you very quickly make the connection between the client and the person in spirit. But you have to be sensitive to the circumstances in which you're giving that information out.
Do you think that there may be spirit communicators who kind of, or maybe spirit guides, who will nudge people to go and see a particular medium? It's almost like if the medium had experience of a loss like that in their life, they'd be a good medium for somebody who's also had that loss. So that medium might find they're getting a lot of clients like that.
I do think that happens to some degree. I've had clients, probably a higher proportion of clients, who have needed some information in one of my different skill sets that I'm not going to talk about here. But yes, that has happened. I think that the right medium is always there for the client. I think once a client comes looking, the right medium is found. I have actually turned clients down when they are asking for just future predictions. They're wanting to know what's going to happen just in the future. I just want to know what's going to happen, you know, in the future about this, because that's not what I do. So I do actually make it quite clear the difference between a medium, a fortune teller or a future predictor, and a psychic. And I always make it very clear before I take a booking exactly what I do.
And I suppose you'd advise people not to make huge decisions based on what a medium or a psychic would tell them.
A medium won't give you a solution to a problem. Spirit won't give you a solution to a problem. That's not their role. We have a sense of personal responsibility. What they will do is provide support and comfort, strength to you if you've gone through a particularly difficult period, but they won't give you a solution to a problem.
What do you advise students on how much feedback they should get from their sitter? Because I suppose if they give too much feedback, then any evidential stuff you give them, they could say, well, you worked that out from what I told you.
Yes, normally we, certainly in demonstrations, we say, demonstrations on a public platform, we would say, just answer yes or no, or I'm not sure. And therefore, they're not actually giving us any feedback at all. It's we are giving them information, and they either confirm it or deny it, or they need something extra to be able to confirm it. And that's generally how mediums on platforms work.
And are there times where somebody will come through a spirit communicator and the client doesn't want to hear from that person?
Yes. Yes, that has happened on a couple of times. Usually it's in a situation where the spiritual communicator needs to be forgiven or feels they need to be forgiven for something that they've done. Again, it's not for me to decide. So I will bring that communicator through. If the client doesn't want to accept that, then I have to accept that the client is not ready and I have to turn that back to spirit.
And I wanted to ask about one of your experiences you talk about in the book. Could you tell us what happened? You said that you, at nighttime, you were asleep and you felt that you'd been lifted up out of your body?
All right, yes. I was asking for a sign. I'd been a teacher working in quite a logical environment. I'd given that up and I was thinking about working with Reiki. And I wasn't sure that this was the path I wanted to take. I had a friend who was also a Reiki practitioner. And she was... She also had a friend who was given a message for me. So it came through my friend, from her friend. She worked as a light, what one might call a light worker. So they work purely with energy, the earth energy. And I was given this some information from her about what to do to support a portal, some kind of, I admit, I had no idea what I was doing at the time, but I was given a list of instructions to follow. And so I did my very best following those instructions, which were basically a kind of a meditation to do at a particular time and in a particular way. And then I thought, well, I've given it my best shot. And then I just went straight to bed and didn't think anything of it. But in the middle of the night, I had that wonderful uplifting feeling, the same kind of feeling that I described when I was going down to my cancer operation, that feeling of just being uplifted, of being surrounded by love and sparkling light. And it was just so wonderful. I didn't really want to come back, but I was very gently lowered back to the bed. And then I went back to sleep. So yes, there are, and I'm sure other people have some wonderful experiences that are very personal to them. And really, you can't get the emotion or the connection that that makes for somebody because it is so individual and so personal. And so it just touches you in a way that nothing else does. But you know that that is a sign for you. And that's just what that was.
Hi, this is Simon. Do you have a fascination with reincarnation? And would you like to know about your past lives? I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy and I conduct past life regression sessions over Zoom. If you'd like to find out how a session works for you, you can book a free 20-minute consultation on my website. That's at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The link is in the show notes. So that was a big sign for you to start learning to do Reiki.
It was, yes. I'd asked for a sign. That's what I was given. And I took that to be a sign. And I felt that was a very strong sign that that was the path I should walk.
I wonder if sometimes I get signs and I see it and I think, oh, that must be a sign. But then I think, a sign of what? It's like, I didn't ask for anything. And what are they trying to tell me?
It depends how it feels. I would say to you, at the time that you get that sign, concentrate on how you are feeling and how it affects you and what connections it makes in your mind, because that's what it's about.
Well, I wanted to ask you about different types of mediumship, because you talk about trance in the book. Is that still mental mediumship, or is it more advanced?
Yeah, it's... So there are different types of mediumship. Mediumship is often used as an umbrella term for all of these things. But there is consulting mediumship, where I will get in touch with a spiritual person and I will feed that information to my client. That is consulting mediumship. There's trance mediumship, which I'll tell you a little bit about in a moment. And then there's physical mediumship. So trance mediumship is where the medium will go into a deeper state of connection with spirit. It takes a lot of practice and a lot of commitment to be able to do trance work. But it means that spirit can then speak directly to the client and they will use the voice of the medium to do that.
And can any medium become a trance medium?
As long as they put in the effort and the training, it's like anybody can become a medium if they put in the effort and the training. It's a taught process. It's very difficult for other people to watch because it involves a lot of sitting around, and what happens is internal rather than external. So it's not something that can be seen by an audience. The actual process of trance can't be seen by an audience, but the effects of trance can be seen by an audience. So, for example, if I was to give a trance demonstration, I have a guide that works with me, and he tends to be a bit of a philosopher. So he would ask and answer questions from an audience while I was in trance.
And it sounds a little bit like the spirit is taking control of you in some way, almost like people say it sounds like possession, but you still have total control. Is that right?
You still have total control. Yes, it's not possession. It's a kind of allowing. You allow your consciousness to step aside and allow somebody else to speak through your words without your interference. So you do not filter what is being said. When you're a medium, a consulting medium, you're constantly filtering the information to present it to your client, perhaps in a public situation where you have to be more aware of what's being said. But when you're in trance, the words that come are not your words, they are the words of spirit. And so therefore, it means that the character of that a person who's working with you in trance comes through. And so everything that they say, you have to allow to be said. It's not something that you filter.
And is a trance medium aware of everything that's happening, or is there a kind of stepping to the side a little bit?
Sometimes you can have a level of awareness, and sometimes they're totally unaware. It just depends on the depth of the trance. The main thing is that you don't interfere with what is being said, even if you do have a level of awareness, that you don't interfere with or filter what is being said. And sometimes that means saying something that you might not necessarily believe in, but that is the word that's coming from spirit, and so that is the words that you have to bring through. And the person that is receiving this message will feel the essence of that person in spirit. So they will feel the energy of that person in spirit, and they will know that they are speaking to that person in spirit directly and not being filtered through the medium.
Well, I wanted to ask you next about physical mediumship. But First of all, have you ever had anything physical happen while you're working?
I've had doors open and shut for no reason. When I've been working, I've had things that I didn't think I'd left in that particular place, so appear in that place or not. When I say appear, I don't mean I've seen them appear. I mean they are somewhere where I thought I hadn't left them while I've been actually in the room. But that's all. That's all. I've not had a lot of experience with physical mediumship. It's not something I've sat for. I understand what happens, but it's not something I've practiced. So I don't feel qualified to speak a lot on physical mediumship. I can give you an outline of what happens and what's likely to happen, but it's not something that's happened a lot for me.
And is there a kind of path where you could start out as a consulting medium, then go to trance, then become a physical medium? Or is physical mediumship so different to the other two that it's something in itself?
You can start on any particular route of those three. You don't have to follow consulting mediumship, trance, physical mediumship. Some people go straight into physical mediumship. Some people go straight into trance. It's not a linear path that way. It's not. It depends on how committed you can be to any particular modality of mediumship. Physical mediumship takes a lot of work and a lot of commitment. And there are few physical mediums around now simply because of the commitment it takes. But there are still physical mediums around.
Yeah, I'd love to go to a physical medium seance. I did interview Stuart Alexander, but I'm not sure if he's having guests anymore.
I was invited to a physical mediumship circle, but it was very early on in my mediumship career and I didn't feel quite ready for it. So I never followed that path in the end. And now, of course, it's would follow that path, but can't find a physical medium.
Yeah. So you say that a spirit communicator will use the medium's own experiences and memories and knowledge to get their message across.
Yes, that's right.
So is it a thing where the spirit communicator might give something to you to get a message across? They give something different to another medium to get the same message across?
Absolutely. That's exactly how it works. That's what I mean when I say it's a very individual connection and people work in different ways. So, for example, if a spirit communicator wanted to get the information across about, let's say, a particular rose that he used to grow in his garden that the client used to pick when she was a little girl, That's the message he wants to get across, the memory he wants to get across. For me, he might give me a physical picture. For another medium, he might give the smell of the roses. For another medium, he might give the thorn prick on her finger to release the memory in the client. So it can be very individual. And some mediums are better suited to some clients because of that, because of the way that they work. So it is a matter of finding the medium that's right for you.
Do you ever feel that the spirits are perhaps more soulful and less human? That they've gone on to this other place and they've developed spiritually?
I don't feel... I think you still get the essence of the character of the person that was here, because we need that to be able to recognise a person in spirit. We need to be able to see and feel what they were like when they were here, the things that they did, the life that they experienced. I think when you go to spirit, we are not individual. It's more of a total combining energy and a shift in energy. We only get one aspect when we connect to spirit of a spiritual existence. I don't feel that we get the whole picture. I don't think we're meant to know the whole picture.
You talk about just then being a collective in a way when you're over there.
Yes.
And that your spirit team may do that, and that instead of coming to you as a team, they may present themselves as a single person.
Yes. It's quite difficult for our minds, isn't it, to get into our heads that we're working with 25 or 30 different energies all at once. And so they combine in such a way that we feel the energy only of one, but we recognize that energetic pattern when it revisits. And so we recognize that as a guide, that feeling that it brings out in us, we recognize it from one reading to another reading. And so we recognize that presence that helps us with the spiritual communicator.
And in the spirit team, do you get the impression there's spirits there that are perhaps very advanced and then some not so advanced? Or you might have specialists that bring particular people through?
I think you do have specialists within that team. And I think when you're working in trance, that's a specialist that steps forward from your team, or a group of specialists that step forward from your team. I think that they're able to shift their energies and combinations of energies to best suit the purpose for which you're working.
And sometimes the communication can seem quite vague.
When it seems vague is when you're in a public situation where the information brought through might be a little bit challenging, and therefore you've got to be a bit careful about how you present that to your client or to the sitter, because nobody wants their dirty washing in public, do they? Nobody wants to know the whole church to know that they may have had financial difficulties, for example, or they may have had mental health problems. You know, that's quite a personal thing, and you maybe don't want everybody in the church to know that. And so then it becomes an exercise in how to get the information across without revealing it to anybody else but the client. And that can be quite challenging.
I wondered if perhaps sometimes the spirit isn't able to get the information across. Say if their name's Gerald, it seems like the medium is saying, I'm getting a name, it starts with a G.
Yes. I mean, that's just the connection. It's a combination of an art and a science. Yes, we have to move our energy to get to the point where we can get spiritual information, but they also have to move their energy to the same point. And that means that it's not always as fluid, as clear, or as detailed as we might like. And that can be due to the energy of the medium, the energy of the spiritual communicator, or the energy of the client. It just depends on that combination.
So I've heard that psychologists will go and see other psychologists, and it's a kind of assessment of their mental state to help them stay level. But is there anything where a medium will go and see another medium to look at their spiritual well-being and how they're operating?
Yes, a medium should be able to support another medium by looking at their spiritual progress. It's a bit of a complicated situation, but the way it works is that the two mediums sit together facing each other, and the consulting medium guide will talk to the guides of the sitting medium and give the information back. So really the sitting medium is getting the information from their guides, but it's coming through the guides of the consulting medium.
And so that can kind of, I don't know, you might say when you're at work and you have a one-to-one and they're just going over how you're doing.
That's right. It's kind of like that. What you will get is next steps or blockages. So it might be that the information that the consulting medium gets is that they have a blockage because they're not trusting themselves enough. They're not trusting their intuition enough. And they're shutting off some of the information that's been given because they're not trusting it enough. And so their next step is to relax more, is to let go more, to believe in themselves more, and to allow that information to come through. And to be prepared to be wrong as well. Because we're not perfect. We're human.
What's your view of this idea that mediums might help earthbound spirits to cross over into the light, so to speak?
Yeah, that's quite a difficult one, isn't it? That's another thing that tends to split the mediumship community. Some people, mediums would say that no spirit is left behind. Everybody has that opportunity to go on to the next world. My personal opinion is that we have free will even after we have passed. And if our connection to the earth plane is such that we cannot let that go, then the door to the spirit world can only be held open for us for so long. And if we choose not to walk through it at that time and it closes, then we become an earthbound spirit. And the only way that we can then move on to the spirit world is if the physical energy of somebody who is alive can help us lift our energy enough then to get to the spirit world. And so, yes, I have done some spirit work like that.
You mentioned a door there that might be open, and I've heard of people talking about portals and spirits coming through, and there might be a particular place on earth and that's a strong area that's got a portal in it. Do you believe in that stuff?
You're getting out into left field there, aren't you?
Okay.
It's kind of like, how far along the continuum do you go? You know, your belief system gets stretched when you work with spirit. And then stretch. So things that I would have thought of as absolutely ridiculous 15 years ago, I now will accept as being part of my belief system. So yes, I would say I do believe that the earth itself has its own energy, and that there can be shifts in that, and that there can be rips in that that need healing, and that there are certain places on earth that, if you like, are more spiritual, again in inverted commas, than other places, simply because the energy there connects more strongly in a certain way. But if you'd have said that to me 15 years ago, I would have poo-pooed it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like when I started this podcast, I heard things that would just seem just too far. And then I hear it from lots of other people and you start thinking, hang on, there might be something going on here.
Yes, it's true, isn't it? It's a case that as long as you keep your mind open and you're open to different points of view and you hear things more than once and you see some evidence for yourself of something, then it becomes more solid for you, doesn't it? And then you start to believe a little bit more in what's possible.
And does that kind of go towards like ectoplasm and transfiguration?
The transfiguration is a different part of mediumship. Again, I don't have a wide experience of transfiguration, although it does sometimes happen if you do some scrying. Do you know scrying, when you're looking into a mirror or a mirrored surface, and you get an overlay of a spiritual face over the face of the medium. And sometimes that can be recognised by somebody in the audience or a client as being a particular person. And basically that just shows that spirit person is around and is present.
And it's interesting, it'd be over the face of somebody else. It's kind of like The spirit couldn't do it if there was no face in the mirror. They need something to work with.
Yes, it's quite a strange thing because people will see, the only way it can be transfiguration is if everybody sees the same thing. Because if people are seeing different things, then that's their own intuition overlaying on the medium's face. But if everybody's seeing the same thing and they're seeing heavier eyebrows, they're seeing darker hair or thicker lips or glasses on a medium that doesn't wear glasses, then that's transfiguration, yes. And yes, it's almost like spirit needs a focus to be able to bring that through.
And is this something that can happen with trance mediumship, or is it just physical mediumship?
It can happen in trance. I've not known it happen to me. I think it sometimes happens as that spirit is stepping forward. Certainly when you're working in trance, you will find that your voice will change sometimes. If you're working in trance speaking, your voice will change to the voice, towards the voice of the person in spirit. And sometimes your mannerisms will also change. And I have heard people say, well, your brow looked heavier or your hair looked darker, but they're sort of general things. It's not like you get a total transformation of the medium in trance.
Do you ever come across anything that may be evidence of reincarnation?
I've explored some of my own past lives. So yes, I can say on a personal level, I have had evidence of reincarnation. And also I did a mediumship, what you might term a mediumship party, where there were four or five ladies who all got together and wanted a reading. And one of those ladies, she came for a reading, but actually I went into her past life, which was quite interesting. The reason I think that happened is because we had shared that past life. And so we knew each other from thousands of years ago. Our spirits recognised each other. And so that was really kind of weird for me too.
So you have a section in the book called The Pattern of Brainwaves. Is this something you use to teach? What is the, how useful is knowing the brainwaves?
It's about understanding how energy shifts and that your brain pattern shifts when your energy shifts, or your energy shifts when your brainwave pattern shifts. We're not quite sure which way it works, but we know that it happens and that certain types of mediumship work work in certain aspects of brain shift. So when you're doing meditation, for example, if you're experienced at meditating, your brain pattern will shift. Your brain waves will shift from the normal beta mode, which is what I'm in now and you're in now, the sort of everyday thing. Your brain pattern will shift when you do meditation and so on.
Can people book a session with you?
Yes, anybody can book a session anytime with me. I do have a Facebook page. And it's White Rose Readings. I do Zoom readings. So anybody anywhere in the country could book a reading if they wished to have it on Zoom. And I do readings locally from where I live, which is near Stokesley in very north of North Yorkshire.
Well, the book's called Mediumship Demystified, The Art of Understanding and Teaching Mediumship. And people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
They can, yes. It's available on Amazon. It seems to be selling okay for the moment. I'm quite pleased with the level of sales and level of interest. So, yes, if it's something that you want to know a little bit more about, you want to understand a little bit more about how mediumship works, even if you're not into teaching mediumship, if you just want to understand and have a good explanation of what the various terms that people use actually mean in this situation, then it's a good book to have a look at.
Great. And thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. It's been amazing.
Thank you. I've had a wonderful time. I hope everybody who listens has found something new in there and something to interest them. Thank you very much.
This week, I was talking to Jane Allen about her book, Mediumship Demystified, The Art of Understanding and Teaching Mediumship. And if you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you can sign up to Patreon. When you sign up for $6 a month, you get an extended episode every week. For $3 a month, you get an extended episode every month. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And there is an Our Paranormal Afterlife Facebook group. And if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.